Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Texas lawmakers passed a bill last year that has shaken up the teaching of race and history at colleges and universities. Critics say these regulations have constrained the conversations they have in the classroom of race, culture, and inequality. Some universities are consolidating departments dedicated to race and gender. Others are eliminating them altogether. Many students, faculty, staff, and advocates are not staying silent. PEN America, a nonprofit that champions free expression through literature and human rights, responded to policies passed by Texas A&M that ended its women's and gender studies program and resulted in allegations of censorship. PEN America organized a group of prominent authors that included Sandra Cisneros and Libro Traficantes, book traffickers, to rally against Texas A&M's focus on eliminating so-called race and gender ideologies in the classroom. Today, we're talking with Jonathan Friedman, Managing Director of U.S. Free Expression Programs with PEN America, and with independent filmmaker Soko Aguilar, who released a short documentary on February's public forum at A&M. Friedman says what's happening at Texas colleges began years ago with controlling what's taught in K through 12.
One of the first moments I started really paying attention to this actually was in Texas in 2021. And it was when a few authors told me that there was a school district in Leander ISD in Texas, that was basically where you had a school board that had been pressed by parents repeatedly to abandon a new English literary curriculum that they had adopted. And a lot of the complaints were really centered on the content of these books and this idea that essentially if some parents thought that the content of those books shouldn't be available to their own kids, then those books shouldn't be available to anyone's kids. And, you know, from there, it really quite quickly started spreading from one school district to another and into the state houses. And it wasn't just in Texas, but in Texas in particular, there was an effort that started advancing in the legislature to basically penalize public schools if they taught certain topics. At first, they defined that which they didn't want taught as materials associated with the 1619 Project from Nicole Hannah-Jones and the New York Times. But it didn't really remain just that. Over time, they started using other ways of talking about what it was they didn't want taught. They said there was a list of quote-unquote divisive concepts that they didn't want taught in schools, or they didn't want diversity, equity, and inclusion taught, or they didn't want race and gender ideology. You essentially had in Texas and in elsewhere this two-front assault that was coming on the one hand from state legislatures and on the other hand bubbling up in local communities. And a lot of the initial laws that were proposed weren't specific about applying only to K-12 schools. They were written in a way that they would apply to schools and colleges and universities. And, you know, there are differences in terms of the academic freedom and the freedom to learn that we associate with K-12 versus higher ed. But over time, essentially neither one of these campaigns, so to speak, dimmed. What happened is they evolved in slightly different ways. So you have efforts in local communities, which have continued to aggrandize and lead to more and more book bans, especially from school libraries. You have bills that have been continually proposed and then passed at the state house that impact K-12 education. And then you have bills that impact higher education. And in the past 6 months to a year in Texas, it's really the assault on the universities that has continued to change and pick up steam and go in some new directions, but it's not like the other things have died out either. So you have this perfect storm where I just keep telling people, we need to talk about Texas because education there is in grave danger.
And Soko Aguilar, filmmaker, we're bringing you into this conversation because there is something happening at Texas A&M. We're seeing these clawbacks in this type of, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion type of instruction. And it was felt particularly harshly at Texas A&M. And you have a short film focusing on what happened there. Can you give us some background on what drew you to A&M and what exactly it was that they did that drew your attention?
So when I went to, I was very excited to go to Texas A&M with a delegation of from Penn America. I have known about Penn for a long time. I'm a member here in Penn San Miguel, and I really admire the work they do with the journalists that are in jail here in Mexico, for example. So I went there ready to what could happen, and as Jonathan can tell you, there was a lot of uncertainty. You know, we didn't know if we were going to be able to have the panel going on or not. So there was all this tension going on, and I tried with my camera to capture the moment as much as I could. And why was I there? I mean, first of all, the university is a place where you can disagree on topics, but you are there for the sole reason to learn about different perspectives and then make your own. I think that's very important. So in almost every issue, there's always shades of gray, you know, like reasonable people disagree on this or that issue. But I think freedom of speech may be the one issue that gray doesn't apply. Because when that starts to happen, it's a red light for something more dangerous and bigger coming on.
And Jonathan, I think what probably drew nationwide attention to what was happening at Texas A&M, and this made me think of the Arizona Mexican American Studies book ban, which drew attention because it actually banned a work from Shakespeare, is that in this instance in Texas A&M, the ban was on Plato's Symposium in a philosophy class, which is something that you would not expect to hear. So can you give us a little bit of background on how that was sort of the ground zero of bringing all this attention to Texas A&M in this instance?
It really exemplifies, actually, in a way, a pattern all over the country, which is the book or the topic or the bit of curriculum that becomes the thing that is censored is sometimes really unpredictable and strange. The case at Texas A&M, you know, fits a pattern I've seen all over, except it's really unusual to see this in universities. This is what we've been seeing in K-12. And I think that does signal something really significant, particularly for Texas. So in Texas, and again, these things are all interconnected. Last year, they passed a bill, SB 37. It seems to have empowered the regents of universities in Texas to develop their own new regulations when it comes to what is taught. And, you know, the way that the American university has evolved certainly is distinct within the world, but what's distinct about it is this really deep embrace and defense of academic freedom, the vital importance of free thought and of expertise in our universities being independent from politics, from political pressure, from political preference. If you want to think about what are the downstream effects of this, and the pun isn't intended, but here it is. What happens when a researcher discovers that something in public water systems is bad for people's health, but the government doesn't want them to tell people about it? And so in Texas, there's a version of this that is advancing, and at Texas A&M, the particular shape it's taken is a curricular audit, an effort to screen all the courses taught at the university. And what's been reported is that this is chaos. What does it mean to not teach about race and gender ideology? You know, one answer is to say, well, nobody really does that in such a perfunctory way. Nobody really is teaching that, so it's fine. We don't need to review all the courses. But what is really happening is it's an effort to take a vague term and then use it to intimidate people. And so within each school, within each department across the university, you have this bonanza review of all things being taught, all materials in syllabi. And think about the complexity here we're talking about. Universities are huge. Huge number of courses, huge number of topics, huge number of students. And you're going to try and impose control from the government on how people talk, teach, think, read, the prospect of that is outrageous. And in effect, that's what's happened. You have Professor A being told they can't teach a topic that Professor B was told, sure, you can teach that. And so downstream, you have one professor who was essentially told, no, they cannot teach that section of Plato because that section of Plato talks about gender. And the idea that we would almost pretend like that wasn't an important part of, I don't know, Western history, democracy, you know, ancient Greece, which obviously is such an influence on the United States today, and again, try to sort of rewrite the past to excerpt out of it that which we today might think could be quote-unquote controversial. It's part of this ideological program, and that's not even everything that's happening in Texas A&M, but that's the main stuff.
Jonathan Friedman is the managing director of U.S. Free Expression Programs with PEN America. We're also talking with independent filmmaker Soko Aguilar, whose documentary, Censorship at Texas A&M, follows prominent writers and activists who bring attention to the ban of Plato's Symposium and other crackdowns on race and gender studies at Texas A&M University. When we come back, Jonathan Friedman says the scaling back of so-called controversial topics hurts students most.
You know, students need to understand that this is a very clear political project that is very anti-democratic and that is pretty hell-bent on depriving them of the robust education that they ought to, you know, receive.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Did you know many Fortune 500 companies have a workplace giving program? Workplace giving is an easy way to make tax-deductible donations to the charities you care about, with donations taken directly out of your paycheck and matched by your employer. Visit tpr.org/workplacegiving today to find out if your employer participates in the program.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Texas communities are crying censorship over book bans at public libraries and public schools. Republican states like Texas are also setting their sights on so-called woke curriculum at colleges and universities that focus on race and gender. Groups like PEN America are leading the charge in defense of academic freedom and free expression. PEN America gathered writers and activists like Chicana writer Sandra Cisneros at Texas A&M University, where material on race and gender has been purged from hundreds of courses. The university also ended its Women's and Gender Studies program. The gathering is highlighted in Soko Aguilar's short documentary, Censorship at Texas A&M. Aguilar's next focus is a documentary in the works about Sandra Cisneros called Sandra Cisneros Uncensored. Cisneros' classic House on Mango Street is a frequent title on book ban lists. Soko Aguilar says she's no stranger to censorship. As she tells us in this conversation with PEN America's Jonathan Friedman, she was working with Mexican filmmaker Lourdes Portillo on a documentary for Frontline about former Mexican President Carlos Salinas de Gortari and the 1994 assassination of Mexican presidential candidate Luis Donaldo Colosio.
So when I was with Lourdes, we started doing a documentary that the working title was The Rise and Fall of Carlos Salinas, the president of Mexico back then. The assassination of Colosio had just happened. So I started working with Lourdes for Frontline. It was going to be a documentary for Frontline. So for a year, I did a lot of research when, you know, back then we didn't have internet. So you had to go back and forward to Mexico, get all the people who were going to be interviewed, and try to find all these photos from the newspapers that were very problematic, like one when Carlos Salinas was in the first page of a newspaper because she had killed the person who worked at his house, and they said that it was an accident. So that paper was impossible to find in Mexico City, so I had to go to Washington, D.C. to find that paper. All those things happened, and we worked really hard for a year. And one day they knock at the door at our office on Bryant in South of Market in San Francisco, and they tell us that they have to take away all the material that we had.
Who is they?
It was a guy sent by the producer that we were in touch in LA. And we said, why? And they said, well, those are orders from above and we have to take the materials away. So they took them away. It was a shock. Lourdes was very, very sad and it really affected her for a while. And I decided from then, I'm never going to work on anything political. But here I am. I'm back.
But you're also working on the Sandra Cisneros film, this documentary, which is about her being uncensored, which obviously is also rather political. Can you give us a little bit better of a tease on that Sandra Cisneros documentary and maybe give us an idea of when we might be able to see that?
So about Sandra, that's really interesting. I met Sandra some 30 years ago, but we lost touch. We didn't have any contact for many years until we unexpectedly reconnected in San Miguel de Allende, where Sandra lives, and I live part of the time too. So it was really nice to hear her voice. You know, she has very unique voice in both ways, what she writes and the way she talks. So we reconnected some years ago. And, you know, the person who introduced me to Sandra was Lourdes Portillo. So we started trying to bring Lourdes down to San Miguel and see Lourdes. And all of a sudden, Lourdes tells us that she's sick. She has a cancer and she was going to die in 6 months. So Sandra went to visit Lourdes. I went to visit Lourdes. And there was like this feel of very deep sorrow that nobody had documented Lourdes' life, what she was still alive. So I thought that it was very important to document Sandra's life. And I talked to her about that. She's 71, but she's very active. You know, she goes up and down and travels a lot. And I thought it was very important because her life, it sets an example for many women and for many Latinas, not only writers, but in general. And also, you know, she has faced this censorship, not only now, but it's been like many times, you know, with the House on Mango Street, with Women Hollering Creek, and now also with My Wicked, Wicked Ways. And of course, you cannot isolate Sandra and her life from the political arena where we are right now, you know. So it's very important to include all that because it's important to give context to the documentary on what's happening.
Well, Jonathan, shifting back to that panel at Texas A&M, which Sokol caught on her short documentary, Censorship at Texas A&M, Sandra Cisneros was on that panel.
Write poetry. Because poetry is the path to the truth you didn't know you knew. And the wonderful thing about poetry, it's eventually going to compost from rage to transformation. When you get to that door, you will know it. And that's what's why poetry is so powerful. It is truth-telling. And that's why politicians don't write poetry.
There were many individuals, also very esteemed writers on that panel. And the people who were there to listen to this panel, they knew what they were there for. But there is a whole student body that may not know that this is happening to their curriculum. And so can you give us an example of how PEN America and yourself, you know, how you're trying to preserve this freedom of expression for even those individuals who might not know that they're potentially losing that right?
I think a lot about that actually with, you know, I mentioned earlier, we are in basically the fifth year of the effort to ban books from schools or censor K-12 or university level education. So what that means is you have students for whom their entire high school experience involved these kinds of political battles. And if they were sort of inured or comfortable with the removal of books from their high schools, you know, there's a risk that they become accustomed to that at the higher education level as well. And so, you know, part of our effort in going to Texas A&M was to, you know, meet with students, meet with faculty. We met with some senior administrators and, you know, bringing writers as reflective of our mission at Penn to kind of champion that freedom of speech from writers, to inspire further writers, to kind of defend the traditions of writing, but also extend solidarity and support for those who are being impacted. And so we did the panel on campus and we tabled on the campus for a day, giving out copies of Plato's Symposium, which I know Soko was in the video as well. And that was a really interesting opportunity to just engage with passersby. You know, here's a group of athletes, and what do they know about this? And here's another group who are, you know, coming to or going to class.
I'm neither left nor right, but I think that if you ban something from school, especially public school, I don't think that's right.
For many, there was a sense that they were against this, that they were concerned about it. There were very few who didn't know anything about it, but there were also not many who felt that they totally understood it. And then, of course, you're in the funny position of trying to explain this. Why did they ban Plato anyways? And it doesn't even make sense. It doesn't actually, you know, fit a kind of rational understanding, because so much of the time, censorship is kind of like a circus. It is kind of absurd. We're seeing this in school libraries and public libraries, and now universities, where people will tell you they're afraid of saying the wrong thing, but nobody really knows what the wrong thing is. And of course, this is, you know, what's so dangerous is that this spreads, and suddenly you find yourself giving a lecture you've been giving for 40 years, but now you don't really want to say, you know, explain those topics in that way that might upset anyone. That's such a dangerous way of approaching education, because if you're not thinking freely and answering questions from students in a kind of spirit of curiosity, then that's not education. That's actually not educating people. Education is about, I think, very much about inspiration and going where people's interests are. You can't really teach properly if you're always worried about saying the wrong thing. And so, you know, what we're doing now is partnering with other groups in Texas to really try to encourage students to get more informed and take actions and speak out. And across the state, we are seeing not only these policies about what professors can't teach, but at the University of Houston, there's a mandate for professors to sign a new statement that they won't, quote unquote, indoctrinate students. At UT Austin, there is a policy that professors can't teach certain controversial topics, but again, nobody knows what that is. And then at all these universities across the state, there's this effort to just cancel and eliminate, or quote unquote, they say they're consolidating, but they're also eliminating departments that are dedicated to the study of African American diaspora or Mexican American studies or women and gender studies. And so, you know, students need to understand that this is a very clear political project that is very anti-democratic and that is pretty hell-bent on depriving them of the robust education that they ought to, you know, receive and have the opportunity to learn as they prepare for citizens of the future.
And, you know, this seems like something that has snowballed. You said this is something that has been going on for a few years now, but it seems to be just really picking up momentum. And I'm wondering, are we too far gone? Can some of the changes that we've seen be reversed? We know that there's been some challenges in courts. For example, the short documentary mentioned it had a librarian who was one of the plaintiffs in the Llano Library lawsuit.
Six of my fellow plaintiffs and I filed a lawsuit against Llano County, and it just ended in December of 2025, when the Supreme Court of the United States declined to hear our case. And so the way that the case law stands now is that essentially censorship is legal in every public library in Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi.
But, I mean, other than lawsuits and maybe even if there's a change in political party power in Texas, are we too far gone to reverse what we've already been experiencing, Jonathan?
We're definitely far gone, I'll say that. but I'm someone who brings a lot of hope to this work, and I have seen and continue to see more and more people get interested and activated around this every day. And the idea that we are all powerless in the face of this is, you know, how we're meant to feel. And I think it's really important that we find community and solidarity, find other people who care about this, and make change. And so many important moments over the past 5 years have actually not happened from grandstanding national politicians fighting book bans, but in local communities, a parent, a teacher, a principal, a librarian. And so this is about mobilizing at the local level, you know, re-engage, lean into your community, and ask yourself, you know, do you really want to live in a society where there are certain topics that you can't get a book on at the public library. You know, the Lano Library case is such a colossal disappointment for freedom of expression, and it has given now free rein for the library board there to censor at will. I don't think that's what everyday American citizens want. I don't think they want to live in a society like that. I don't think they want universities where professors are afraid to teach, or schools that can only indoctrinate their kids. I think that is a real affront to the traditions of freedom and liberty that, I mean, certainly talk about Texas, right? This is what we've long all been told is part of American tradition and culture. And so I do think that in the long run, yes, people will mobilize and they will push back against this. I think it's a question of how long it takes to get to there from where we are now. But truly, there is more stories emerging all the time, even in Texas. In the time since I was at Texas A&M, we had a new story hit that is from New Braunfels, the school district, and it involves the removal of over 1,500 books from the school. And it is such an astonishing array of classic texts and biographies and memoirs. And, you know, it's happened at all levels of school, elementary, middle, and high. And it's in reaction to a law that passed last year, SB 13. But as usual, you have a vaguely worded law and you have someone locally who has decided that the best way to implement it is in a kind of whole cloth screening of the entire library collection. And so what they did was use AI to identify books that might have quote unquote adult content. But the thing is, the vast majority of books that are just for a general readership are classified as adult. So anything anybody read in high school English class for the past 50 years is an adult book. If you read Catcher in the Rye or Shakespeare or anything else, those are not considered children's or YA books. They're considered adult books. So no wonder this means they're sweeping up so many things. But it has led to sweeping up books by Sandra Cisneros. But I mean, it's books by just about everybody. Shakespeare, Homer, autobiographies, memoirs by Prince Harry, by Michelle and Barack Obama, George W. Bush's memoir about his father, Bill Clinton's memoir, My Life. I mean, the list that we've chronicled at Penn America, and you can find this on our website, penn.org, in New Braunfels, is astonishing. I mean, somehow 5 years into this, this is one of, if not the wildest book ban I have seen. And I've seen quite a few.
If I can add something, it's going against being human. You know, I mean, I love etymologías grecolatinas, Greek Latin etymology, and the concept of university means, you know, a totality, a whole. The concept of philosophy, when we talk about good Plato, is love for wisdom. We're going against truth, against humanity, against wisdom. You know, it's really absurd, I think.
I think arts are also a way to educate people about this, because there might not be people who are sort of involved in this news of what's going on, but they are watching movies. They are reading the books that they can get their hands on. Could you, you know, tell us about why you think filmmaking is so important in being able to educate the community?
My dream is that the documentary, this short one, and then later on Sandra's, reaches wider audiences. And there's no like, this is bad, this is good. I mean, they're just seeing something in a very objective way, you know, what the camera lens sees. And in this little piece, I am very happy that we can do something about it, you know. So I think this is the beauty about a film, that it can tell you that you are powerful, you can do something about it, you know, and you're seeing the story passing by your eyes. You know, like as a young student said there, you know, I'm being here witnessing the story passing in front of me because the civil rights movement is still not over.
I feel like a lot of people my age don't really realize that the civil rights movement is not over. It is still going on to this day, and it's not a thing of the past. And people like Sandra showing us that the history is more than just from the past. It is today. Free Plato!
Jonathan Friedman is managing director of U.S. Free Expression Programs with PEN America. We're also talking with independent filmmaker Soko Aguilar. Aguilar's latest short film is called Censorship at Texas A&M. We have a link to the film at tpr.org. Aguilar is currently working on a feature-length documentary on Chicana writer Sandra Cisneros. Go to tpr.org to see a teaser from Soko Aguilar's forthcoming documentary, Sandra Cisneros, Uncensored. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Chiranga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.